direct cause of this, this is a direct cause of this.
And how is it a direct cause, though?
This, by definition, because there is no other moment of mind between it.
But it's not really a cause, though. It's just one follows the next. But
we call that the main cause, in the way that
the
corn sprout in the August is the cause of the corn sprout in September. It grows into it. That is the main cause. The main cause of mind is the mind of the previous moment.
But this is, for example, eye awareness. That's a sense perception.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if I'm looking here and then I'm looking here, how is looking here the cause?
The content changes, but the fact that you're aware of what your eye is seeing doesn't change. You see, I mean, that's what awareness is. It's visual awareness, not necessarily that you keep on the same object. But it might be easier if you think of it as keeping on the same object. So let's say you're staring at the same object. You see what I mean? It's the same cause. The causes. Each moment causes the next moment of. Each moment of consciousness causes the next moment of consciousness. And then there's no. This is a direct cause of this. This is a direct cause of this. And this has to be continuous. This has to bump up against that moment. And that's what the meaning of direct cause is, that there's nothing between them.
Mm-hmm.
Except that as a priori. Mm-hmm. There has to be parts of the first moment of mind that are closer to the second moment of mind than other parts of the first moment of mind. Because if that were not the case,
they'd
match, and there would never be any movement of time.
Is that the same as the argument reincarnation? Consciousness?
It's related. It's based on the same fact that consciousness has to cause consciousness.
Okay.
If you accept that for 2 seconds, milliseconds in time, you've just accepted past birth.
Right.
But so isn't that where
Could
the
you do
cause
that again?
Is a little bit...
Once you accept that consciousness has to come from consciousness and not from dirt, not from the parents' blood and semen, not from any other cause but mind, then you have to accept the past life.
How does except for the question of original generation, which is not addressed and put.
You mean the first time it ever happened or something like that?
Yes, because if it has to have come from previous consciousness, then that's not a good argument because. For exactly the reason that you said earlier, that which is, well, if it came from something, it had to come from what? So what might that be? Clap.
Well, tell me anything. I mean, I say it came from consciousness because it has to come from something similar, the same stuff. That's true of apple trees, that's true of telephone poles, that's true of vases.
Unless you can say what it came from, I don't want to take
you mean,
too much
what
time.
Was the
I don't
original
consider
cause,
that
the very first cause?
For example,
therefore,
yeah.
There is no first cause. Which doesn't mean it
that's
has no
logical.
Cause. It doesn't mean it has. It's absolutely logical. It's not logical to the Westerner who has the bias or the prejudice that you grew up with. That it's quite logical. It's perfectly logical. It's just you didn't hear it before. Your parents didn't tell you when you're 5 years old. Oh, your mind is beginningless because any point of mind that you can point to must have had a mind before it to cause it. And if they had, you'd feel quite comfortable with it. And maybe not for very good reason.
Okay, we've heard you make fun of people who are trying to advance a point, and you say, well, where does that come from? And the guy says, well, such and such, and you back him up, and finally they say, well, I don't know. And to me, you've just said, well, I don't know.
No, I can point to any moment of mind, any moment of consciousness, I say, has to have come from a previous moment.
Mexican stand up, but I defer.
Okay.
Sanje Chodam Soki Chonama Chang Chu Badu Dani Kyab Suchi Dani Chunin Jinpe Sonam Ki Toa Penche Sanje Tupasho Sangye cho dam so ki cho nama Jang chu pa du dak ni tiap su chi Dak ni ching yen chi se so nam ki Tro la pen chi sangye tu pa sho
Help me on this, Michael.
Sa-ji
today's homework.
Yeah.
I don't mind that. I think that's wise. I think we blew that last time. We didn't do that. Yeah, what mistake does someone make if they are assuming that Maitreya is already a Buddha when they're debating whether the person who wrote this book is doing it for his own benefit or from others? If they assume he's a Buddha, if their argument is coming from the place that they think Buddhas don't need to worry about themselves, Then they've already broken a rule of debate, which is that you can't bring up tantra. You can't get into that realm in a sutra debate.
Oh dear.
You can't. Otherwise, you're going to get very confused. As you know, if you've had any exposure to it, you know. So he said you have failed to distinguish between what we call the tumorin loop and the tumorin loop, which means the way which is shared and the way which is not shared. What's the way which is shared? The three principal paths. Okay. Which is the way which is not shared? Because why is it shared? Because you need it in tantra and you need it in sutra to get anywhere. In fact, it's the cause for it, succeeding in tantra. And then he has failed to distinguish between secret and non-secret. Maybe he's right, but he shouldn't have brought it up in the context of the open teachings.
So it's out of context.
Yeah, it's a failure to distinguish the right time, to talk about these things.
So that's the answer.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Well,
can a Mahayana person still have the aspiration to fill his own needs? Of course. And you've had it in several different ways. You've had it as the person who... in the Lam Rim, he follows the lesser person and the medium person's motivation. You've had it in refuge, when he also shares the motivation of the Lam too, but not as an exclusive motivation. Can I do two things?
Bodhi line, are you?
Yeah, yeah.
You saw it.
I helped.
And Dharmakirti, he said, he did say, hi.
He
this
said
is Roach.
Hi.
I'm in. This is Roach. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm in the middle of a class, but I have to tell you, I'll call you later. Is that okay? Okay. Good. It's a deal. Okay. Yeah, bye.
Michael, before you go on to the next question, isn't the point that a Mahayana person has to have the...
yeah, he does.
Not, has to.
Yeah,
you know, not can. Must.
Okay. He has to have bodhicitta and bodhicitta.
Yeah, and apparently that, you know, people still... I asked Rinpoche, I went through it with him, he got Dumbo with me. Dumbo is what? Do you know what Dumbo means? Dumbo is the honorific for...
Ofkepist, as I say in German.
And a lama, when a lama is Rafa, it's his Rafa aspect. I asked him like three times over, and he doesn't like that at all. He doesn't like it the first time. But, why a Buddha still has bodhicitta? And it's like, are you crazy? What is he doesn't care about other beings? Ariel brought it up in the car well. She said, if he has the aspiration to achieve Buddhahood, then aspiration is almost by definition when you don't have something and you're aspiring to get something. And in Tibetan, it's matoba tobaga dunya, like that. Matoba tobaga dunya. So I said to Rinpoche, well, does he have matoba tobaga dunya? He says, no. He says, he has aspiration, but it's not the kind of aspiration where you're trying to get something that you don't have. So I said, well, isn't that the meaning of aspiration? And he said, no, he's got this kind of aspiration where he just wants to be a Buddha.
That's not aspiration.
And then she said, well, that's not aspiration, unless there's a chance he could lose Buddhahood, so he could aspire to keep his Buddhahood. And I said, it's not like that either. He just wants to help others, and he wants to be a Buddha. And that sounds
pretty
good.
Like Popeye.
He never loses the want to be a Buddha. And we call that want dunya, and it's an unusual use of the word aspiration. So I think you have to leave it like that.
Oh, boy. Thank you for giving us that question.
It's not aspiration in its normal sense of getting something that you don't have.
It's already having it and still wanting to have it.
Yeah. I think
because you've had it.
Logically, this is exactly what we do in the debate ground. We get to this point, and all the students agree. We sit there and we say, well, that's all it can be. That's all it can mean here. What else could it mean here? And then we go on. And somebody actually, what happens normally is you go read a scripture and suddenly you see, oh, this guy said exactly what we just said. That's normally what happens. You figure it out in the debate ground and the next day you find it in the 10th century textbook somewhere. Because it just pretty much has to be like that. So your questions were good and valid. And you have to say it.
Well, I got a few more on that.
Well, that's what this review is for.
So before Buddhahood then, bodhicitta is the aspiration to become a Buddha for the benefit of all beings.
Haven't reached yet.
Well, to become a Buddha. That's a key operative word here, is become. Okay, then after one becomes a Buddha, bodhicitta is still there, but there's a new nuance to it, which is to stay a Buddha, even though you couldn't unbecome a Buddha.
Maybe to be
to stay as a Buddha, or to like to be a Buddha.
I think like that.
Something like that. Yeah. That makes sense.
That's the only logical thing.
So the bodhicitta is there in both cases. It's just that the wish to help others doesn't change.
That's
in
accepted.
Case.
Yeah, you never need that.
So it's just the understanding of being a Buddha, which is
right.
That makes sense. All
right.
Go over the whole exam.
I am going to, if you don't have any more questions.
What? To go over the exam so that, you know, so that we know what sort of to expect.
The last step, what did Dharmakirti say was necessary for tantra is very easy. It should have been, and he's speaking specifically about mantras used in tantra, by the way, is that it should have been composed by a holy being. And then from our side, you have to follow the rules of that practice. So this applies to all tantra practice, not just the mantras of tantra. But the tantra has to have been instituted by a holy being.
A holy being, not a Buddha?
It's all it says is Devadampa. That usually means a Buddha.
In the text, it just talks about the teacher who gives the
initiation. Well, there's no teacher who's not
a preceptor.
That was easy.
Is it referring to the Lung, or is it referring to the initial origination of the tantra?
That was one of the qualifications of a lama, incidentally.
That was
be a holy being.
Okay. No, but we
there
didn't go
into
the
argument. Qualifications of a lama.
No.
A sutra or tantra.
No, we made
it. Not split hairs and.
You have to follow the practice effectively. Specifically, the vows.
I missed what you said. Was it the origination?
Yeah, originally.
Could you just explain number four, the quiz question? It says,
what's it say?
Does emptiness itself have parts? How so?
Just about everybody got that right. Anybody want to explain? Lauren?
Emptiness?
What is emptiness?
That was the one that you said that you couldn't really prove.
You said space. You see, you proved the emptiness. You proved the parts of space in the space that you were supposed to prove.
What quiz are we looking at?
You proved the emptiness of physical things in the fact that you were supposed to prove the emptiness of mental things. No, that's good proof, but they're right. No, it's all right. The one you're supposed to prove the parts of mental objects in analysis. Not physical. And then the other one was emptiness, not space. Maybe you got confused with empty space and emptiness. Because that happens a lot. I mean, great scholars are confused about that.
Michael, in that last question, the Dharmakirti question, that's the fickle finger of fate. you said, the way you worded it on the exam, it sounded like you gave the Tibetan class two distinct terms.
Was it?
I don't remember.
Shared and non-shared. Number 9, number 8.
It says the 12 is supposed to be present, name them.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
This is 10.
It's what you wrote. It will be.
I didn't say anything about holy beings, I just said teacher, but of course.
No, teachers are. Teachers are.
I just spaced out the way.
All right. I want to do it. Yeah.
Just quickly, back on the homework for today, under 2A, is a simple yes a good answer, or is that real lame? Suppose Maitreya is a
good answer. Normally, it's not a good answer.
Does he still have the wish for enlightenment?
Say again?
Suppose Maitreya is already a Buddha, does he still have the wish for enlightenment?
Oh, in this case, a simple yes is acceptable.
Thank you. Two B needs to
be pretty hard question. Normally, it's not good to answer with one word. Yes.
What's the answer to 2B?
Maitreya.
Anybody else?
I have a question from way back, if that's all right. Do we have to memorize the long definition of the greater ways? Which? Oh, thank you.
John, this is going to be for the quizzes, right?
The final only comes from quiz questions.
What's the answer?
I know all the quizzes,
and
you know the final.
Did you hear that?
Yes,
I know.
That's the
one that's
I just want you to know
it's only in the homework.
And frankly, when a Geshe gets his Geshe 2 years later, that's all he remembers is what's on your quizzes.
I'm so glad. I couldn't learn that.
Of course, 2 weeks later, we may not remember.
It's like medical students, right? You know what the gurus, baguzus, they say, you know.
So the answer to 2B.
So suppose Maitreya is already a Buddha. If yes, does this wish fit the short definition of the wish for enlightenment? I think perhaps a simple yes may not be as welcome.
No, that's okay. It obviously be preferable if you could give this a short part. He still wants to help ultimately, and he still wants to be a Buddha. We're not going to say become.
Is it?
You could have defined it for a Bodhisattva with be a Buddha, right? Maybe you could get out of it that way.
What are you talking about? Say that again.
He wants to, that a Bodhi... If you define it this way, you might get out of the whole problem if you say the definition of Bodhicitta is to want to be a Buddha for all other beings.
That would stretch it a little better.
Yeah, you stretch the word. Mm-hmm.
So the idea with the answer to that question is when you have the wish for enlightenment, you achieve the Dharmakaya. And the Dharmakaya is the enjoyment body?
No, those are separate. The German body is the form body, which is opposed to the body.
The mnemonica or rupika?
Yeah, the form body has two parts. There's the part of his beautiful form in paradise, and then there's the part of his form as he shows it on earth.
So which is the enjoyment body?
The one is in his paradise.
Samboga.
Yeah, Samboga. And a lot of people get that mixed up with Sambhava. A lot of lamas say Sambhava, and they mix it up.
So when you're saying that he's trying to pursue his own, to fulfill his own needs then, and you're using the explanation of pursuing an enjoyment body is fulfilling
his needs.
Oh,
that's only for others' needs. You see, that's principally for others' needs.
He gets the enjoyment body from fulfilling others' needs.
The reason he had, the function of the form body, principally, is to help other people. It's the fulfillment of other people's needs. Because it's the only one that can teach.
And which provides him with an enjoyment body.
It is the enjoyment body.
It is his enjoyment body. So in terms
the fulfillment of others' needs and the enjoyment body are the same thing.
So in terms of the wish, right?
Oh, what gives him the enjoyment body? Mainly the collection of merit.
Yeah.
As opposed to collecting words.
What I was trying to get to was just using that body to define how the wish fulfills his needs. You see what I mean?
No, the wish... No.
This doesn't work that way?
No. The Dharmakaya is the fulfillment of his needs, mainly, principally.
In what way?
Thank you.
Omniscience. and removing all his... realizing all objects and removing all obstacles. That's fulfills his benefit. That's mainly his benefit. And then the fact that he shows himself, which is the whole rupakaya part, the whole form body, is mainly for other people. It's mainly the fulfillment of other people's benefit.
Is somewhere in there, is it implied that since it is mainly for the benefit of other beings, then that it, otherwise, were it not for that, it's not necessary for a Buddha or a being on that level to have any kind of form body at all.
Yeah, mainly it's for other beings. Yeah.
Right, so if it were not for the bodhicitta involved, they could exist in some sort of Dharmakaya form, and that's it. And the only beings who could be in contact with them were other beings on that form.
Yeah, and
I still think that's a really artificial distinction. I mean, how much good are you without omniscience?
Oh, not much, and that's why they say principle.
Yeah.
Or maybe you feel more comfortable with direct benefit, manifest benefit. You see, that's not improper in a debate to say, you know, the form body is the manifest benefit, but the driver behind the form body is obviously the Dharmakaya. Yes, ma'am. Anything?
I missed the first class, and maybe I'm just a dummy. What's a Dharmakaya?
Oh,
I thought it was the form body.
When you divide the bodies into two, and you can divide them also into three or four, there's mainly the form body or the Dharma body. And the Dharma body consists of his omniscience and the emptiness of that omniscience.
Okay.
And then the form body consists of two different bodies. The one he shows on earth, and then the one he shows, and then the one who lives in his paradise. His physical manifestation. Whether it be in his own paradise or whether it be on planet earth for the benefit of us. And those two form bodies are called the Nirmanakaya. The Nirmanakaya is the one he sends down to earth. And it means, Nirman means to send down, it's a movie theater, you know, video body. And the other one is the Sambhogakaya, which means, you know, the body that's blissing out in this paradise. It's the enjoyment body.
B-H-O-G-A?
Yeah. The Dharmakaya is
Dharmakaya. Sambhoga means bliss out?
Yeah. It means enjoyment. Dzogpa Longchipa, to enjoy to its fullest extent, literally.
So would he also have enjoyment from his Dharmakaya?
I'm sure he does, right? Yeah. Helping others. You know, that's the main. People can learn directly from the Sambhogakaya, but they have to be very high bodhisattvas. Like?
Like Kriya.
No, Asanga.
Asanga, yeah.
When you say it's a body, what does it look like? Does it physically look anything like a person?
Well, that's a good point, and I liked Thupten Jinpa. I like him for one reason. He thinks about translations. He just doesn't accept the old ones. He calls it the embodiment. In Arizona, he was using that word, and I kind of liked it. Meaning, you know, not that because the Dharmakaya, the body of Dharma, what does that mean? You know, I mean, there's no thing you can see. Body normally means you can see. Or is it that he has four different bodies running around? And I used to get really confused about that. The word is body. The word is four bodies. But obviously they aren't like this kind of bodies. They're all just aspects of the same being. They're like the five heaps of that being.
So both the Sambhogakaya and their Dharmakaya are not like human forms, but there's some kind of...
Right. They are described as visible but not matter.
The Dharmakaya also?
No.
No.
The two form bodies are visible, but they are not. They are not what we call in Tibetan Pembo, which means particulate matter. They are stuff, but not matter. They are visible, but not matter. They're touchable, but not matter. their physical did not matter. That's difficult.
So if you perceive emptiness directly and you with the individual analysis, you see the Dharmakaya, what does it look like?
It's emptiness. It doesn't...
There's no visual.
I don't mean, yeah, when I say see, I mean, you know...
Perceive.
Perceive in your mind. Well, that's a good point.
Dharmakaya encompasses both form body and dharma body.
No. Dharmakaya only is the half which includes his omniscience and the emptiness of that omniscience.
So that's Sambhogakaya.
No, Sambhogakaya is the blissy, the physical body in his paradise.
The two bodies, which then can be divided into two. I'm going back to the first week. You, and I took down the quote and just repeated it, because ultimate
refuge... I hate it when they quote me and it's
wrong. What makes something an ultimate refuge, and I quote... is its quality of being the final goal achieved with regards to the journey along the path.
No, what makes something...
this was a quote.
What makes something is an ultimate refuge is when the journey along the path has been completed. That's the definition.
Okay, so it's the complete...
The
end.
Refuge in which the journey along the path
has reached its end.
Reaching the end.
Why do we need the journey along the path? I guess that's...
That's the definition in your book. I'm not going to change it. There must be a reason.
It's redundant, but it's good.
Good and redundant.
So you want
to no, I mean, if you're in a debate, they say, well, there's a reason, you know, they're trying to make it, trying to emphasize that it's a result of that. Or they're trying to emphasize that it's not the path, it's the result. You see, you could say it different ways.
The final refuge is at the end of the journey towards the final refuge.
Anything else?
I
have one question, okay?
We'll try to help you, Michael.
I about the last two bhumis, okay? The last two bodhisattvas. And Kariya too. Normally when people get confused, because I'm confused. And I used the computer, and I wanted to put in a plug-in for the computer, you know what I mean? I was able, in the traffic jam in the Lincoln Tunnel, to look up every reference to the eighth bodhisattva level. In a few minutes, and read them all, and understand everything that the book says about the eight, and it's 1,000 pages, you know. So, I cut them all out, paste them together, put it in another file. Now I can read you every reference to the eighth bhumi, and they're all very interesting. They shed a lot of light on it, and they explain why I was confused. So here we go. The first section I cut out says that. And you don't have to write them on. It might be too much for you right now, but it says, a person who's on the pure levels, which is 8, 9, 10, right? Bodhisattva levels. In the period in which they are out of meditation on emptiness, right? When they're not in direct meditation on emptiness, things appear to them as truly existing, but they don't believe it. So that was the first thing he said. And here's the one I think Kaliyat helps the most, the next one. It says, according to our own system, which is who? Who's our own system? Yeah, don't forget, even Kirutama Dargya, when he teaches Satantrika, he puts on a Satantrika hat. And he says, according to our own system, a person who has not been on the lower track before, there are people who start on the Mahayana track, and, you know, it's not necessary that you be one of the lower tracks. You can start on the Mahayana track. So he's saying, let's talk about it's called Menlong Lundama Soma. It means a person who started right off on track number 3 from the beginning.
I thought you had to do it chronologically.
No, you don't have to go up through the 3 tracks. You can start right on Mahayana track. In fact, they encourage you to do that. They say it saves time. You can start right from the first path of the Mahayana track. Okay. So he's talking about a person like that. Why? Why did he say that? He doesn't want to... He wants to isolate that person who's going through the bhumis without ever having been an arhat before. Because if he's been an arhat before, he got rid of all his mental affliction obstacles, meaning mental afflictions and their seeds, before. So that would be a little bad... It would be a bad case to try to figure out when does a person who's only been on the bodhisattva track get rid of his mental officials, which is the interesting thing.
When does he?
Okay. good. So the first, you know what he is. He's a bodhisattva who's never been on the lower tracks. He reaches the same level as the Hinayana arhats as far as getting rid of his mental afflictions and the seeds. And he achieves Buddhahood, total Buddhahood, at the same time.
No, wait a minute. Wow.
Oh, it all happens at the end.
No, you said that. Originally, you said that.
Yeah, and then I flip-flop.
How can that be possible? Wait, that would mean that he hasn't received emptiness directly.
No, no. He gets rid of his nyingas, his mental affliction obstacles. Meaning, mental afflictions and their seeds.
Yeah.
Only at the moment that he achieves Buddhahood, which means he carries them through what?
All the path.
The last three
right
Buddhas,
to
too. He still has them on the
so
last three
So he can still
Buddhas.
Have a...
So the point at which he has abandoned
so
everything
he has
that...
he has no nirvana until the end.
Hinayana arhat abandoned. It's not until he achieves Buddhahood. It's not until he achieves Buddhahood that he's gotten rid of all the baggage that a lower arhat already got rid of. As far as mental affliction obstacles. But he also gets rid of what?
The obstacles to omniscience.
The
right.
Omniscience obstacles. Does the lower guy get rid of those ever?
Yeah.
No, never. Okay. So we can say that a person who's never been on the lower track abandons the mental affliction obstacles and the omniscience obstacles
at the same time, right at the becoming
at the moment
of
he becomes
Buddha.
A Buddha. Yeah. And that was my point of confusion.
So they get the nirvana and the omniscience simultaneously, whereas someone who's already been a Hinayana arhat gets the omniscience as Buddhahood.
Yeah. This is not on your exam, I'm just saying it. You don't have to get if it's a little confusing. I just want it said. And I can correct his, now I can correct his chart. But I couldn't.
Wonder what happened to the chart.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to let it out not
oh,
knowing if it was correct.
Chart.
Oh, but wait a minute, then what is...
By the way, it says here, and I'm going to quote it directly, okay? It says... He quotes a scripture to prove it from the Tengger. And then he says, therefore, when a bodhisattva gets rid of his mental affliction obstacles, he at the same time gets rid of his omniscience obstacles. And so, he says, at the same moment, he becomes an arhat and a Buddha.
But Michael, what does that do to the path of no more learning? How is that a path, then?
It's not a path. It never was. The path of no more learning is really just a result.
But that's Buddha. Then it's Buddhahood,
yeah.
So why even name it separately?
Because it's called that. Well, I don't know why they name it. I don't know why they call it path, frankly, because it's not a... By that time, it's really a state that you reach from the first four paths. Is that what you mean?
Right, but it's made it sound like it was the last, you know...
No, it's not the last stage. It's,
stage
it's the result.
Prior, just
no,
prior
it
to
is the result. Long, path number five is a result in every case. No more learning is just the result of the first four paths. It's called a path. But don't forget, path can just mean knowledge, state of knowledge. It doesn't mean, you know, something that gets you somewhere necessarily.
But then why isn't it called omniscience?
Or, you know? Well, no more learning is omniscience, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mahayana no more learning path. Mahayana arha. Buddhahood. Mm-hmm. Moment after the 10th bodhisattva bhumi finishes. Getting rid of your mental fiction obstacles in this school. Getting rid of your omniscience obstacles. If you haven't done, by the way, that first one before, on a lower path, those all occur at the same time.
In this school, maybe the important call.
We're getting there. Okay.
Mahayana arhat, who wasn't a Hinayana arhat before.
Right. Now, here's an answer to another question I had. He says, this just happened to pop up, so I wrote it down. A person who has Jupa Senke, the form of bodhicitta in which you're actually engaging, you've had that with. What path can you have that on? He says, you can have it from the first path of the Mahayana track, path of accumulation, up to a Buddha level. you can have that kind of bodhicitta, which is engaging.
We need our chart.
First path meaning bodhisattva.
Right, obviously.
Well, we were talking about track. You were calling track.
Mahayana track.
Track. This is track.
And then he says something interesting. He says, but the wishing form, the praying form, the form in which you're praying, and which does not rely directly on actually engaging or taking the vows, he says, you can have that from the first path of Mahayana, which is the accumulation path, all the way up to the eighth bodhisattva level. Through the seventh.
How can you be a bodhisattva without having...
So now, I asked Rinpoche, I got him in the corner, and, he hasn't looked at this stuff for 35 years, I mean, you have to realize that, too. I said, listen, you know, can you have both at the same time? You know, because I presented it in class, in one of these classes, as, oh, one is before you take the vows, and one is after you take the vows. Now, I now think that's probably wrong.
Okay.
I think it's that, I think the key is in the word, it depends on the vows, and it depends on actually engaging. So I think you can have the one in the back of your mind and while you're in your room and not directly engaging and helping other people. Looks like that.
You wouldn't have them simultaneously. One would be...
Well, that's a question. I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think you'd have them at the same moment. You know, but maybe you alternate between them. I start
but if it's not dependent on taking the vow...
Directly dependent on taking the vow. You know, maybe you're not, at that moment, engaging in activities that are keeping your vows. We got to study that more. I admit that. No time tonight. Okay, you all right? And he says, the reason I brought that up is it says here, from the eighth level up to the wisdom that is out of meditation, there is never a time when the object does not appear to that person as not being self-existent. Which, to put it positively, stating it, all objects are appearing not as self-existent to a person who's on the last three buddhas.
Appearing empty.
Can't say empty.
What are they
it's
appearing
It's going to be
as?
A trick here. They are appearing. There's never a time when objects are not appearing to a person on the last three buddhas as not self-existent.
As self-existent.
Which means that they're always appearing self-existently, unless they're in meditation.
No, there's never a time when they're not appearing, not as self-existent.
You got three negatives.
Which is to say positively.
Never a time.
They're always appearing as not self-existent. Wait, we're going to get there. Stay with me. This is interesting. This is a little bit too interesting. Maybe I shouldn't bring this up. Don't get confused.
Do you think we should be doing a review?
I really we'll get to that. I'll give you all the answers.
When? This is a review.
Well, the thing is, I'll give you all the questions.
Yeah, but it's a review of what he
said. Don't give me something. But how about the answers?
Review for the next question.
Here's something that says, Sagye
Bigyu. Just, you try. Dentin Yin Gyu Apam.
A person from the eighth bodhisattva level has given up permanently the manifest form of grasping to self-existence. He has the seed, but it no longer ever happens directly.
Oh, so that's the same. Okay. We had that in here.
Well, go back to your first.
We had that as a level, as a bodhisattva level.
Wait, listen to them all and then tell me if then ask me questions about it. Okay.
It's the ripening bodhicitta? Is that the same one? Still has the seeds, okay. But everything is gone.
Yeah. Here's the catch, okay? Here's why I was confused. He says, now we're going to talk about whether or not you can say that this book that we're studying, which is what?
The answer is a
the perfection of
the analysis
of the perfection of wisdom, or the overview. Either one.
You're studying a commentary on the Prajnaparamita.
The Ornament of Religion.
It's Asanga's book.
Ornament of Religion.
Yeah, the Ornament of Religion. He says, some debater comes up and says, this is a Prajnaparamita book. This book is Prajnaparamita. And the way he beats him is he says, oh, well, I guess that this book says that you get rid of your mental affliction obstacles at the eighth level. Which means what? What does that imply?
That the Prasangika say that you get rid of the mental afflictive obstacles at the eighth level.
At the eighth level. You see what I mean? That's the debate. That's pretty clear, it's, at least to me. Okay. That's all. So it means that the reason I was confused is I just got out of Madhyamika a couple of years ago, Prasangika, and they taught us in that class that at the eighth level you get rid of your mental afflictions and all the seeds, but not in this school. Okay. Next thing it says. There's never a time when the compassion of a person on the eighth level doesn't realize that the person, that the beings it's focused on are empty.
Again, never not. So you always realize that they're empty.
Yeah, it's always seeing them as an illusion. They look like they're not empty, but he knows they are. Okay, here's the last one, okay? And then we'll really go to reading.
Okay.
Dibe Lugla, in this system, Senjin Dendut Duyangna, the sentient beings that the compassion is looking at appear to be. Oh, it's running out of battery. Cheers, you're lucky. The sentient beings that this love is focused on both appear to be self existent and also appear to be not self existent.
To whom?
To a person on the eighth level. That's what I want to get to. Okay?
Simultaneously?
Yes.
I thought only a Buddhist saw emptiness.
Right, good. So it's what it's saying is this. On the eighth level up, there's never a time when the Bodhisattva isn't directly aware that he's crazy, that things are an illusion. And that awareness is called things appearing to him as self-existent and things appearing to him as, at the same time, as not being self-existent. Just that thinking that way. But it's not like a Buddha.
Because it's not direct perception of both.
A Buddha is seeing the horse and the stick exactly at the same time. He's like some kind of unbelievable spectator who sees the deceptive reality and the real thing at the same time. Which is almost incomprehensible. That some who could come up to a magic show and see the stick as a stick and see the stick as an elephant at the same time.
So this is like the latecomer. This is like the latecomer.
No,
he's different. Not the Buddha, but the eighth level up. It's like a non-Buddha. That's why they say a non-Buddha.
No, it's not.
Because all he's seeing is emptiness. He's an emptiness meditation.
No, she's saying the late. Oh, you're right. You're right, yeah.
Okay.
No, he's more like the magician.
More like the magician.
Okay, so that's all. Now, I really will go through the spiral. Just don't write down the question.
That's one.
That would be tacky.
Just write down the name. Jeffrey. Take the poison.
How about matching? We just draw an X.
In long rim, I was taught that you have to develop the motivation of the three scopes, first the lower, then the middle, then the higher.
Oh, in long rim, you mean in sequential order?
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, you have to have renunciation and Bodhisattva.
Yeah, that's true.
So how can you go straight to the Mahayana and not go through the scopes?
Well, don't forget this is a whole track where you are Oh, getting renunciation and getting bodhicitta in Mahayana track on the same moment, right?
So the idea is as soon as you step Mahayana, you like spontaneously have gotten the lower
true renunciation and true bodhicitta occur at the same time. As opposed to goosebump renunciation and sugarcane bodhicitta.
Right at the outside of the path.
Goosebump
renunciation. There's a thing called goosebump renunciation. That's what you get when your mother dies. Seriously. Everyone gets that. And for 2 months, you're moral, and you're aware of the impermanence of life, and you're very sensitive to people, and you... And everything is really religious. You are, for a short period, you're like really aware of the high truths and of what's important and what's not important. And then it wears off. That's why it's called goosebump. It's not real renunciation, but it's very close. Mm-hmm. When somebody really close to you dies, especially your mother.
That happened every 2 months.
Doesn't happen for your father? Is that what you're saying?
I'd say especially for your mother. You know, unless you had, there are these people who had terrible experiences with their mothers. But it's very rare. Normal people. Normal experience. All right. Give a brief definition of the perfection of... Don't write this down! We'll just go around. I mean, this is just fun. I mean, last time... I wanted to do this upstairs, but we don't have room. Definition of perfection.
It's a perception of emptiness, which is linked with a desire filled with love to help suffering or sentient beings.
Yeah, the wish for that.
Could you just put it under the influence of bodhicitta?
Yeah. Please don't write down, okay? Just listen. You can remember. You can get the tape from that. What's the root text for our study?
Torment of realization.
Good, yeah. Who spoke it?
Translated to Sangha.
Good. What are his estimates? I asked, what are the estimated dates? Because his, I mean, God, we need my tray of bone, who knows?
350.
Yeah,
350.
Nina, I won't ask you this hard one. John, who wrote the Tibetan monastic commentary that we are studying?
Hari Bhaka.
Tibetan monastic
commentary. Tibet.
Kedup Dembadagni. Kedup Dembadagni.
1593 to 1488.
Yeah, don't forget. I mean, easily. He was born the year after Columbus came to America.
Could we just say easily that it's 500 years ago this year? It makes it a lot easier.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Yeah, oh, we ought to have a party.
That's what I wanted. That was my next one. Another excuse.
But what month was he born? What day?
No,
we don't care.
We could make t-shirts and we could have a parade.
T-shirts!
I want
okay, so.
Happy 500.
Yeah.
Forget Columbus.
Is that yours?
Okay, 1493, 1568, right?
No, but it fell down
on the
floor.
Nina, definition of the
Dharma Jewel. Tonight I'm not there. If you ask me questions, I'm not going to answer right. So.
I'll give you an easy one. Definition of taking refuge. Short definition. Two things necessary. I mean, minimum. If you get this right, I'll look at it. Two things have to happen for you to go to mommy. Tom, you can guess. Why do you run to mommy? Huh? Why does anybody run to their mother?
For help. Having a thought that acts of its own accord, that consists of hoping that an object outside of oneself will. I forgot the verb.
Rendering.
Render assistance.
So basically, in fact, I almost prefer if you put the two causes for refuge, which are one word.
Which, what are
fear.
Fear. Secondly,
belief they'll help.
Belief that this object can help. That's why you run to mommy. Why do you run? Something bad happened. Why to mommy? You think she can help you.
You're not supposed to write that.
I know, but I don't have that. I have the other definition.
Wait a minute, you didn't use that in the general definition of refuge because it wouldn't necessarily be fear. Ordinary refuge.
Yeah, it's not mentioned ordinary refuge, but I don't mind if you say taking refuge, because you take, when I say taking
refuge. You might buy a Mercedes, you know, it's going to make you happy, it doesn't mean you're afraid.
Yeah, that's true. Can
you
feel
fear?
Yeah, this says taking refuge and not modern. I take refuge and not Buddhist taking refuge. If you think it can help you. But doesn't it, when you say render one assistance, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a kind of a problem?
Well, but not necessarily fear. You may not feel rich.
Okay. Vimla.
Fear.
Definition of Dharma Jewel. Tukum Tukum.
Dharma Jewel is the enlightened side of truth in which either one of the. A sensation or a path has been. Realize.
Yeah. Okay. And give me one example. It's basically, that's it. It's the enlightened side of existence, consisting either of a path or a system. Okay.
Or both.
I think I have to cancel the both part.
Really?
You did cancel.
No, we had it that way.
I thought I did cancel.
No, you did. Yes, you did.
Grammatically, you can read it that way, but if a cessation is permanent and alarm is always impermanent.
Can we cross it out of the translation?
Yes, please.
In your vocabulary.
Although next course, I might come up with something that's both. There's something that's close to both.
I don't think I could cancel.
Cancel
what?
Don't worry about it. I'll come up with something that's close in some school. Let me ask you a question. Give me an example of a path.
A path?
Even like the first
three principles?
Yeah, yeah, good. Give me one of those three, that's fine.
Renunciation,
yeah.
Bodhicitta,
yeah.
And Karyapu.
Yeah, good, nice. Okay, that's an example of a path. Lee, example of a cessation.
Anger.
Anger? You should get in a debate about that. Ace, maybe you're talking about the end of anger, or
something.
Give me an example of a cessation.
That's fine. That's the example I gave in my homework.
No, then you have to say the end of anger in a person's mind speaking.
The end of anger. Excuse
yes,
me.
Okay.
Right, I beg your pardon.
The permanent ending of anger in a person's mind speaking. That's a cessation.
Permanent. Okay.
There's other cessations. I'll give you a few. I'll give you a few that don't depend on individual analysis. They don't depend on seeing emptiness.
Should we write these down or should we not write them down?
You don't have earth as in hell or the animal or as a ghost. You also reach a cessation before you see emptiness directly, where you can never again destroy your basic virtues. You will never again destroy your basic virtues through wrong view or anger. You know, I say, ah, this is all stupid, this is all ridiculous. I don't believe all this stuff. You know, I went to all those classes, I got a certificate. By the way, minister, you can say, for the first class.
At last.
You know, throw all this stuff out. It's happened. I've seen it happen a few times. You take all the things, you throw them out.
You reach a point
all
where you can never again destroy your basic
and then they get
virtue.
Some kind of a weird...
yeah, but there's something...
You become some kind of a
wrong
weird person,
actually.
Yeah. And then they often come back years later, and they're not the same anymore. Something wrong. So anyway, that's destroying your basic virtues.
Excuse me, you had several syllables after that. Can never again destroy your basic virtues.
Through anger?
Through anger.
Oh, okay. Or through wrong views.
Thank you.
Is that cessation the cause of the previous cessation that you mentioned?
Probably, yeah, something to do with that. They're probably related, but I wouldn't want to say it because I haven't. It's not
that hard. Well, you certainly couldn't have it after the other one.
Yeah, right.
I mean, really.
Okay. Ariel, describe a refuge that we have in common with practitioners of a lesser scope. Give it to small people.
Feeling a fear of the suffering of the lower realms.
The lower realms.
And believing in the power of the three jewels to test you. You take refuge in one or more of the three jewels.
Nice. Woo. You must have been staying. You know, the irony is you guys know this better than I do. Okay. Vienna, describe result refuge. A lot of people got this wrong in the homework, so I remember. What's result refuge? I always used to get them confused.
I don't know.
Kylie, you know result refuge? Without looking?
I know.
Any movement of the mind?
When you take refuge in your future Buddhahood?
Yeah. Janet, the Buddha. Assuming it's future. We don't know, do we?
That's right.
I mean, as far
but
as...
The future could be a very long time.
I mean, as far as you're concerned, I know it. I don't
Isn't there a sutra that says that eventually
eventually everybody will be...
Oh, no, absolutely. That's the idea of Buddha nature. Because your mind has emptiness, you will become Buddha. But what I'm saying is I don't know that she's not loving you.
I'm not, believe me.
That's what they always say.
That's what all those Buddhas always say. That.
Who are you?
Kylie, shorter definition of the greater ways which were enlightened.
Shorter definition of the greater ways which were enlightened. I think it's bodhicitta being the wish to fulfill the needs, perfectly fulfill the needs of others and of yourself.
Two wishes. What are the two wishes?
The wish to attain total enlightenment for the benefit of others.
And the wish to help others. Those two wishes.
Well, that's not fulfilling their needs?
It is, but it's not stated like that.
But okay. You don't include yourself in
you
that.
Got, it wasn't
a right?
It's not.
I felt like if I said the wish to help everyone and to help yourself, he's going to say, nah, it's a fulfilling needs.
No, it was a really simple thing he gave us, his clean cut.
Oh, here it is, for Mrs. Kylie. Describe the two types of the wish for enlightenment. Well, that's not one, no. By the way, it says here, if you know two different ways of splitting the wish into two, you may write either one.
What?
There's two ways to split it into two. I think you only know one, which is fine. You write down the one that you like.
So what's the other one?
Gosh.
Now, don't forget us. Just keep going.
If you're
going to
get confused, leave, and then I can know.
Hey, what were you doing?
What?
How about
the I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, you said... You
split bodhicitta into two and tell me what you want.
The wish of prayer and the wish of engagement.
What are you looking at?
We'll see. I can end it, Michael. We don't have time to study.
You got it right before your hand. You bring a loop right on your hand.
Bring a loop.
Yeah. Okay, engaging and try to describe them a little. You know, one is... I don't mind if you say you're directly involved with the actions of bodhisattvas. And one is not directly involved. Obviously, they're both involved, but not directly involved.
One
is directly involved with taking the vows, and one is not directly involved with taking the vows. But I don't think the second one is the person who hasn't taken vows. It's just not directly involved in his vows.
Is this, excuse me, is that the wish of prayer that you're speaking
yeah.
of? May I ask, it says, is this true, the wish of enlightenment as a prayer does not depend on?
It does not directly depend on, I think I might have put that in a lot of people's homework.
Yeah,
I have
you did.
What?
Give me.
Directly.
Does not directly depend on one taking the vow or two actually engaging.
You said, does it depend on one having taken the vow?
Yeah, that's incorrect. Hmm?
What distinction does that make directly?
I can tell you what it means in the case of acting out in a as a bodhisattva, and I think I told you that as a bodhisattva. I mean, they have it defined in the text.
So it's like the act of directly vow involved moments of vow inactivity.
Directly involved with activity of a bodhisattva means, you know, actually giving somebody something with the conscious intention that by this act may I become a Buddha and may he become my student in the future.
And may he become my student in the future Buddha?
Like that, yeah. Directly involved is that with the activities of a Buddha, bodhisattva. What it means to be directly dependent on the vows, I don't know. I have to tell you something.
But you emphasize within the wish of engagement that all activities, you know, right. body, speech, or mind are assessed in terms of whether
there is this famous thing in Shantideva where, you know, even when the bodhisattva is pissing, he's doing it for sentient beings, you know. So I don't know. Anyway, I'll have to study that more. Frankly, okay. Number 10, give the definition of nirvana. That's France.
Nirvana is a sensation which comes from individual analysis.
What is it cessation of?
Sensation of mental affliction.
Yeah, and there's seed. Yeah, which is the opposite. By the way, if you've been a Dharma student for a while, please don't put down these old things that you heard 3 years ago in somebody's class, okay? I get that sometimes. It irritates me. Sometimes the more advanced students, they don't bother to study it precisely, and they come in and they write down something they heard in some class, and I know what it is. I heard it too, you know, and it's imprecise and sometimes incorrect. So go study exactly what the book says. Okay, that's the reason you're here.
Are you distinguishing between the knowledge and the semantics, or
no? I'm saying the way that Kedava Tenpa Dargye expressed it, because there's always a reason why he did that. He's not just you're probably getting a feeling now for why he doesn't use a word unless he has something meaning to it. You know, he doesn't add another adverb or another adjective unless it's important, especially in a definition.
Except that oftentimes words aren't qualified.
In what sense?
Like enlightenment.
Oh, you mean he doesn't say Mahayana enlightenment?
Reality,
or
total.
You still get in trouble.
No, you still get in trouble.
No, you use the word, and they say, well, how do I know you know what the word means?
There's a study of that. We'll get that.
I know. You get it on my homework.
So they have something to debate in monsters.
Yeah, you got to have something. Okay. Carolyn, what does individual analysis mean here, meaning in the definition of the monster? We didn't add that, did we? Which resulted from individual
analysis? Yeah, she said that. She said individual.
Okay.
Thank you.
You guys are getting real debaters.
Yeah. It means seeing the four noble truths one by one as a result of having perceived emptiness.
Yeah, please add that second part, okay? As a result of having perceived emptiness directly. Because otherwise, individual analysis of four noble truths, you can do it right now. Joe Schmo can do that.
Well, don't you also mean immediately after perceiving emptiness?
Yes. Immediately after.
It's not something that happens 10 years later. You said, gee, now I perceive it.
I'm talking about that. Yeah. Okay. Nina, what is nirvana with something that no one means and nirvana with nothing that no one means? In this school. What's left over?
The seed?
You gotta study. This is Monday we're talking.
Okay.
The stuff, the five suffering heaps. Somebody in another class asked me, does it only refer to your body? And I asked Rinpoche, and he said, no, it's all five heaps. Our suffering heaps. They all get transformed when you die. And I said, well, how can his mind, his mental heap, be as lousy as his physical heap, because he's now got rid of all his mental afflictions? So hasn't his mind, in a sense, transformed already, and that's not left over? And he says, well, in the sense that it was produced by his former karma and kleshas, that mental afflictions, is still dirty, even though it's having nice thoughts right now. Okay, so from the viewpoint of it's having been produced by something impure, it's impure. Is it impure by its essence now? No. It's pure. So we still say it's in the category of suffering heaps, although he's not also capable of suffering anymore. It's suffering in the sense that it was produced by his former bad deeds.
Well, that sort of implies, along with the physical heaps and the other ones, that no matter what you do, once you get to that point, there's nothing else you can do until you die at that point. And then,
to a Hinayana, that's true. Once you got rid of your mental affliction obstacles on December 4th, 1993, you don't have anything else to do
anymore.
It's clean.
No, but I'm saying in this case, what's left over, you're saying even the mental is still left over because it's produced by these other ones.
Right.
It's a sort of a fatalistic thing. Even your mind, there's nothing else you can do except for wait until you die, and then they're all going to be manifest purely after
that. Yeah, that's true.
What was that thing about a painful death? But that's just...
Oh, no, the physical body is still giving the pain. How he will perceive it.
Is different.
Or how he'll react to it is different. And I'm curious, personally, when we get to Pasangika, what they say. Because I'm not sure what they say.
Didn't they tell us that they said that when you perceive emptiness directly and then you come out of it, and that you still have...
Yeah, right. For them, leftover means something else.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't want to get into it. Yeah. Positive
brain.
Okay, whose turn is it? John? There's a kind of nirvana called nirvana which doesn't stay. What is the meaning of the phrase, doesn't stay?
Means that you're not satisfied no matter where you are.
That's
no, let me try again. Wait, wait. Means
that you don't abide in either samsara or nirvana.
In a lower work. Yeah. By the way, some people didn't write that on there. You better write it.
Totally awesome.
They don't stay in samsara and they don't stay in a lower nirvana.
I thought any nirvana you don't call total nirvana. It's like assume lower. No.
Don't assume anything. No.
It was stated
you're in a nice monastic class here. You know, you better be precise.
Referred to as the extreme of peace.
Yeah, it's called, they're called the extreme of peace and the extreme of the world.
Oh, it's that extreme.
In neither extreme. By the way, those are not the extremes that the middle path threads its way through. And some people got that wrong.
But can you just go to elaborate?
When you talk about Majjhimika, when you talk about the middle path is also going through two extremes, but it ain't those two extremes. There's two sets of two extremes. When you talk about Madhyamika, the two extremes are what? Thinking things are self-existent, and thinking that if they weren't self-existent, they couldn't exist.
So that's the middle way.
Nihilism, I don't know, Nietzsche, Kierkegaard, whatever they are, forget it. Okay, thinking things are self-existent, and thinking that if things aren't self-existent, they couldn't exist. And Madhyamika goes through the middle. That's why it's called Madhyamika. That ain't the two extremes we're talking about here. We're not talking about why Majjhimika is called Majjhimika. We're talking about why not staying is called not staying. Some people got that wrong. Because I brought it up as an example of an extreme, and then some people took it as to mean...
It's a question. For the purposes of the test, is there a right to paraphrase? You know, you say, like, staying is not staying is samsara, not staying is nirvana, or do you want to
right.
use, like,
it, I prefer the extreme of peace and the extreme of peace. You won't get anything what? Wrong, you won't lose any points. But I think it's just good for you to say the nirvana which doesn't stay in the extreme of peace, which means lower nirvana, and doesn't stay in the extreme of the world, which means samsara. That would be precise. Okay. Vilma, describe the three main parts of the method for achieving nirvana. Listen, I remember this. I have to correct, like, I have to correct 40 papers, the same thing. Then I have to correct it again on all the credit, 80 times.
The three main parts are the training and wisdom.
Is number one.
Is number one.
Which perceives selflessness, okay?
Right. And that...
And it'd be very nice if you said that. Training wisdom which perceives selflessness.
And that wisdom is... is under the...
Good.
Is under... concentration and morality.
Yeah, he's under the influence. Somebody under in New Jersey said, how about immersed in? I said, I like that. Mm-hmm. That's a nice. Immersed in. It's immersed in what?
Concentration and morality.
The training of concentration and the training of morality. Okay. A lot of people thought those were the three steps. They're not.
What were the three?
They thought that the three trainings were the three steps. That's not. You're doing it correctly. She's saying training number one relates to step number one. Trainings number two and three relate to step number two. And then what's step number three?
It's when you have lost the habit of seeing things as self-existent. And
no, it was the opposite. It was getting the habit of what?
Of seeing things as empty.
Yeah, of realizing emptiness. Practicing realizing emptiness. Doksim Gomba. Practicing what you saw on the path of seeing. Going over and over what you saw on the path of seeing. Habituating yourself to what you saw on the path of seeing. Yeah, I really prefer if you say it that way. Okay? Getting used to what you saw on the path of seeing.
In the path of seeing.
You saw emptiness. Getting used to the emptiness, which you understood directly for the first time, shouldn't say understood, saw directly for the first time. That's the third step. So step two has two parts, right? Step two has two trainings. Right. Whose turn? What did you have? P. What's P mean?
I don't tell you.
Respectful for sister. Temple for Our Lady in Thailand. Okay. Mm-hmm. My dear sister. What is important to why is it important to identify the object we deny? Why is it important to identify self-existency? You remember?
Mm-hmm. I do. Because we want to know what emptiness is, but before we want to, before we knowing that, we have to know what it's we deny, that it's a self.
It's what emptiness is empty of. If that's all you put, I'll be happy. Okay? It's what emptiness is empty of. If you don't know what emptiness is empty of, well, how do you know emptiness exists? It's a self-existent thing. You have to be able to imagine a self-existent thing. Can you have an imagination of a self-existent thing? Yes. Is there a self-existent thing? No. Okay. Yes. Missing. You all right?
No, because I can't find my homework to class 8, and that's exactly
what. Well, you're supposed to read off the homework anyway.
I don't know any of this stuff.
Okay.
No, I don't care. I just want you to get it right. I don't want you to think about it. Okay, three different people in the magic show. What's going on?
So,
she remembers, huh?
No, it's not you. Go ahead.
Limited. So the spectator is like.
By the way, I prefer that you say this, the original spectator, or something like that, because the last guy is a spectator too.
Okay, so actually, I've got it backwards in a sense. So anyway, the spectator is like somebody who has not perceived emptiness directly, and. Both sees things as self-existent and believes they're self-existent. Good. And the magician is like somebody who's perceived emptiness directly and sees things as self-existent but knows perfectly well they're not.
After he comes out of that meditation, right? Someone who has seen in the past emptiness.
Excuse me, okay.
And who's now out of that perception, and he's walking around and he's...
That's
as distinct from the very last.
Same things. How can you see things if you're in the perception of emptiness?
Yeah. So then,
please make it
clear. I got some points off for that.
Yeah, he's post meditation. It's important because number three is what.
So then, the latecomer is like someone who is a sentient being, a non-Buddha sentient being, who is at that very moment seeing emptiness directly,
great.
And doesn't believe it's a horse and doesn't see it as a horse.
Okay, good. Does he believe anything else, by the way?
I don't think belief can occur
at
that moment.
You can't think this is that, what we call cursing.